And this is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center, back again for another week. We're certainly excited about that. Thank you for listening. Last week was a good show. And then last Friday, I got to fill in for Bob Bell, and we talked about, or last Thursday, I filled in for Bob Bell, and we talked about anxiety and nervousness and worry. And that the reason I brought that up on Bob's show is because, because school starts tomorrow. For some, and one of those some is my son. So my five-year-old starts kindergarten tomorrow. So be praying for the Wood household, the Wood family, tonight as we get Gavin into bed, and tomorrow as we send our son, our firstborn, to school, which is hard to believe that he's going to school, but that's what's happening. So we would appreciate your prayers. What I want to do tonight is look at an issue that that we see far too much at Hope Resource Center. And the issue is the unuse, or the moving away from true love waits. And if you've been in the church for a while, if you grew up in the church in the 90s, true love waits, makes sense to you. It is some people would put on true love waits ring. I wore a true love waits ring for years. You make purity pledges, and the whole point of that is to say we're going to save ourselves for marriage. So we're going to have any sexual intercourse with anyone until we marry. So the whole point of that is to celebrate the way God designed sex. And what we have now is a culture that celebrates one night stands, a culture that celebrates Tinder and different apps that people use to that's damaging the communities that are around us, that's damaging college campuses. And so tonight what I wanted to do is focus on, maybe we do need to get back to the true love waits message. And what brought this up was there's an article written by Aaron Davis for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. And this article, that's her point. Her point is she's a Gen Xer herself. She grew up in the 90s. That's when she came of age. That's when she came to Christ, was in the 90s. And the message was true love waits. It was, churches all across the country would hold true love waits rallies. Youth groups would go off to camp, and they would talk about purity and chastity. And they would talk about these things and abstinence and how you need to save yourself for marriage, and how that sex is sacred, that marriage is sacred, that it's meant to be a bond between a husband and a wife, that it was designed that way. Those are the things that we have somewhat gotten away from, as this hookup culture tends to be the norm in our society. And so what are we going to do with that? What are churches to do with that? What are pastors to do with that? What are youth groups to do with that? What are we at Hope Resource Center to do with that? Because what we're seeing at Hope Resource Center is the effects of those that didn't celebrate purity, those that didn't celebrate chastity, those that didn't celebrate abstinence. We are seeing what happens from that. We are seeing the brokenness and the fracturing of these lives that come into Hope Resource Center. And one thing that I want to point out before I get into this article, when we talk about sex, when we talk about marriage and the sacredness of it, the whole point is you do understand that it was designed. Sex was designed by the author of life. Sex was designed by God. God created Adam. And then he said, I'm going to give you a helper. And he created woman from Adam. And then what he say? Now go and populate, reproduce. And so God designed them to come together as one. God designed them to be with each other in marriage, together as one. It was a sacred act, made to reproduce, made to give life. That is how God designed it. So if you want to hear a good breakdown of that, I would encourage you to go Google Matt Chandler and Mingling of Souls, and he does a great sermon series on this particular topic. But what we know that in Genesis 3, sin entered into the picture, and what happened? It fractured everything. So God made it for a purpose, and sin fractured it. when sin entered into the equation. So we must talk about this. Because of sin, we now have eyes that want to lust and look places they shouldn't lust. Because of sin, we have people acting out in a hookup culture. Because of sin, we do things that we know we shouldn't be doing. And because of sin, pregnancy sometimes occurs. Well, then that can take you down a road of, are we going to step into more sin? Are we going to terminate this pregnancy? Are we going to take care of this pregnancy? Those are the things that we are facing at Hope Resource Center with people as they now try to figure out what their next step is. And the thing about pregnancy and the thing about premarital sex is when you do get pregnant, people see what you have done, right? So we have a lot of people that sin and they keep it silent and they keep it hidden. But if you are not married and you end up pregnant, people are going to start talking, right? They're going to see, oh no, something has happened. So that's when we have to step in and engage and have those conversations. So now I want to get to this article. It's called Why We Still Need True Love Waits by Aaron Davis. And again, you can find it at Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, ERLC. You can find it online. But she points out the hookup culture and what it has done to women. And she cites Ann Maloney, who is an associate professor of philosophy at the College of St. Catherine in St. Paul, Minnesota. From her post on a college campus, she is on the front lines of the war for young people's hearts and minds. She's seen her share of casualties. In her article, What the Hookup Culture Has Done to Women, she describes the devastating toll casual sex is having on college-aged women. And then here's a quick synopsis of what is going on. Here's what Ann Maloney says. The young women I encounter every day on the campus of the university where I teach are worse off than this rape victim because they do not know what has gone wrong in their lives. Nonetheless, something has gone terribly wrong, and on some level, they know it. It is no coincidence that the top two prescribed drugs at our state university's health center are antidepressants and birth control. Our young women are showing up to a very different version of college life than that of the previous generation. The world we have created for these young people is a world which welcomes every sort of sexual behavior except chastity. I'm going to go out on a limb here and suggest that the reason so many college-age women binge drink is so that they can't bear their own closeted sorrow about what they are doing. Now listen to that. The reason they binge drink is so that they can bear their own closeted sorrow about what they are doing. And then let's get into the article from Aaron Davis. Here's what she says. These women and the men they are sleeping with bear the image of God. They are broken and battered by the lie that freedom comes when we throw off God's guidelines for sexuality. Women have never been more sexually liberated than these women, so they are told. No more are they shackled by ridiculous bonds that, like commandments, moral rules, words like chastity. They shout, "We are free." Yet they whisper, "Why are we so miserable?" Maloney writes, "I continue to be struck by how unfree these students feel." Now fast forward another 15 years with me and imagine the shockwaves that will be sent out from the epicenter of this sin. These women are future wives and mothers, future Sunday school teachers and pastors' wives. They will sit in our pews and in our women's Bible study. The men that make up the other half of this sexual equation will also come into our churches as walking wounded. When the reality of their sin finally falls on their shoulders, it will be an unbearable weight. If their wounds are to be bound up, it will only be by Christ, and often through the ministry of the church. We must be ready to run in with the salve of the gospel for those already wounded by the lie of sexual freedom. But in addition to doing triage, we must warn the next wave. We still need to beat the drum of purity. We still need to teach young people to wait. Please hear that. Have that conversation with your child. In the broader culture, sexuality is the cause we are all war dancing around. Whether it's homosexuality, pornography, or sex scandals within the church, nothing makes Christians stick out from the broader culture quite like the talk of what happens or should happen in the bedroom. I don't think this is an area where we should compromise. Davis goes on, however, sometimes we get the order of the messaging wrong, don't we? The lost need the gospel first, and God's commandment second. A desire to keep God's law is a byproduct of accepting God's grace. The gospel is the highway we want our young people to drive upon, but sexuality works as a guardrail along the road. Here's what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 6. Flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but the sexually immoral person sins against his own body. So all sin is the same in that it all separates us from a loving Father. But sexual sin is different because the consequences are so devastating. When we throw off the guardrails or simply neglect to maintain them, young people careen off into an emotional and physical abyss that is extraordinarily difficult to come back from. In the same way, the consequences of sexual sin are so dangerous that we must protect our young people by teaching them to wait even before they are mature enough to develop a robust theology. Grasp God's grander plan for sexuality or even articulate the basics of the gospel. So don't just have the talk. Keep talking. Pastors, please put purity in your queue of topics that you address regularly from the pulpit. There are young people in your pews who need you to show them where the guardrails are. Youth workers, look around at the faces in your small group, your Sunday school class, and your Wednesday night program. Then listen closely to Maloney's haunting words. An entire generation of women is wounded yet unable to find the source of the bleeding. They quote-unquote hook up, feel awful, and have no idea why. It's hard to heal when you don't know you've been damaged, and the despair and shame that these women hook up feel is real. That these women who hook up feel is real. So we must have these conversations. We must talk about purity. We must talk about chastity. We must talk about the sacredness of marriage, the sacredness of sex. Because it's leaving a devastating, or putting a devastating toll on men and women in this society. We'll be back in a sec. Beautiful day. And we're back. This is Andrew Wood. Thank you for listening. Today we're talking about why we still need true love waits. And again, if you grew up in the 90s, that makes complete sense to you. If you grew up in the church in the 90s, you were always told true love waits. You need to wait for your partner. You need to wait for your spouse, whoever that may be. And so it was discussed on a regular basis. And now you very seldom hear true love waits. If anything, you hear a lot of folks nowadays kind of attack the 90s style Christianity. So a lot of the worship songs and the corniness of a lot of things that went on in the 90s. And so the answer to that, it seems like, has been, well, let's just go a different direction. But in doing so, have we stopped talking about purity? Have we stopped talking about God's design and plan for sex? And so I'm all about making things cool and making things relevant and bringing what was going on in the 90s to 2016. I'm all about that. Trust me. Believe me, I am. But what we have to do is, in doing that and making things relevant, making things cool or hip or whatever, changing the messaging, it doesn't change the ultimate message. And the ultimate message is purity and chastity isn't corny. It's biblical. You're not a legalist. It's not celebrating legalism when you say wait till you get married to have sex. No, that's obeying what the Bible says. That is what we need to be doing. So as I raise my children and as I have those conversations one day, I'm not going to simply say you need to wait till you get married just because daddy said so. I'm not going to say you need to wait till you get married because you may get pregnant. I'm not going to say you need to wait till you get married just because you may get an STD. Now, all those things are true, and those conversations need to be had. But we wait till we get married because that is the way it was designed to happen. So are there people that are legalist and want to do good just to do good? Yes. But we can't miss out the truths behind the commandments that are put forth. And what the scripture says about us and what the scripture tells us to do. And so as we're having those conversations, and folks, please have those conversations, we need to understand that sexual purity and chastity, again, is not corny. It's biblical. And yes, there are some folks that push abstinence, and they struggle to message that, or they struggle to package that message in a relevant box for today's youth. I get it. So how can we message? How can we package our message of purity and abstinence to a youth that is always looking for something cool and something hip? One thing you can do is, you know, a lot of these youth want to be the outsider. They don't want to do what everyone else is doing. Okay, well then save yourself for marriage. Because I can assure you that's going to put you in a minority group. Save yourself for your spouse. And what a great thing that you can tell your husband or wife the night of your honeymoon. You're the only person and the last person I will ever be with. Let's celebrate that. We are doing it exactly the way God designed it to be. Maybe you're sitting there listening going, well, the ship has sailed on that one. What does it mean you can't start today? Saving yourself for marriage. You know, a lot of times I had a conversation this morning with someone. A lot of times our patients come in and they have acted out sexually with a number of different partners. Some of them gotten pregnant. Some of them have gotten STDs. Some of them might have gotten a negative pregnancy test. But the damage has been done, right? Because you can't just stop. You know, when two become one in sex, that connects you to that person. It's not as easy as just walking away. And so what a lot of people do is they say, well, I've already had one child. I've already had sex out of marriage. You know, this is who I am. I'm just going to keep doing that. Well, I've already done this and I've contracted this STD or whatever. And they continue down that path of destruction. What needs to happen is we turn away from that. So if you had sex out of wedlock and you ended up pregnant, then save yourself for your spouse. You can start today. That is who we are. That is what we should be doing. So these conversations, we don't have to make them corny. We don't have to make them awkward. Is it going to be weird at some point to have that conversation with your child? Maybe. But have that open dialogue where you can approach the situation. Because it's better to approach it than not approach it at all and then suffer the consequences. Which is what so many families do. Especially now that the True Love Waits movement seems like it's kind of gone to the wayside. Well, in the 90s, a lot of parents depended on that True Love Waits conference. Because parents were saying, well, they're going to take care of that talk for me. I don't have to have that talk. Well, parents, you have to have that talk. And you have to keep talking. And you need to have a conversation with them with, well, why did you and your spouse decide to wait? Or why do you ultimately want them to wait? And again, it's not just to be do-gooders. It's to celebrate the way we were designed and the way we were made. That's why we wait. That's why we save ourselves for marriage. So many people growing up laughed at me. Friends, buddies of mine, best friends of mine laughed. But as we got older, he's like, I wish I could have done that. I wish I would have waited for my spouse. And then you talk to girls, and girls would say, I wish my husband would wait for me. Whoever that may be. Now, that's not easy. And I'm not sitting up here like I didn't fail at a lot of things and struggle in a lot of areas. But we need to be putting in the effort. Regardless of what society says, the best case scenario is you wait till you're married. That's the best case. That's the ideal. Should we not strive for the ideals? It's like when society celebrates broken families. Well, the best case scenario for everyone involved, husband, wife, and kids, is for it to be in a traditional family with a man and a woman and then the kids. Traditional families have more money. They have better jobs. The kids are better educated. So that's the ideal. Now, do some of us, are some of us not able to be there? Some of you are listening and may say, well, that's what I wanted, but my husband left. That's what I wanted, but my wife left. But that doesn't mean we don't strive for the ideal. And the ideal for our children and for the youth is to save themselves until marriage, is to get out of the hookup culture. That is the ideal. So let's strive for the ideal. That is the way God designed it. So let's strive for His design. That is what we're commanded to do. So let's strive for what He commanded us to do. That's not legalism. That's seeking out the ideal that God has put forth. Because I'm telling you folks, His design is better than yours. 100% of the time. We'll be back in a sec. All the boys in the band want a Valentine from a Barlow girl. And we're back. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight as we're talking about the sacredness of marriage and of chastity and purity and abstinence, and how we've kind of gotten away from the true love waits motto that so many Southern Baptist folks and other places, other denominations focused on in the 90s. And so, you know, one thing that I'm glad, you know, and even there were moments in the 90s where I thought, okay, that's kind of corny. As a teenager, you know, you think you know everything. But looking back now as a grown man, I'm so glad that there were people there to pour into me and say, hey, this is why you should wait and save yourself for marriage. This is why. And then give me reasons. Now, some of those reasons were mainly for do-gooding, you know, just being a do-gooder or just to follow rules. But even that is a good conversation to have that will lead you to, and this is how God designed it. It's the same conversations that we have about alcohol. Don't we have those same conversations? Well, sin fractured everything. So now you have fractured marriages. You have marriages. You have fractured, you have people that are alcoholics. You have all of these fractures inside society because of sin. So we have conversations with our kids. We have conversations with people to encourage them to do what God would have us do. So don't become a drunkard. That's a conversation you're going to have with your child at some point. So in the same vein, why would you not also say, and save yourself for marriage? Because as Paul said in the text that I read earlier, sexual sin is sinning against oneself. It is something that's not just on the outside of the body. It affects you for a long, long time. I'm always reminded when I think of this topic, I'm always reminded of what John Piper has said once before. And John Piper has talked about a number of things, but he talked about abstinence. He talked about the importance of saving yourself for marriage. And in doing so, he talks about pornography. And he said that there was an image when he was 11 or 12 years old that was seared into his mind when he saw a Playboy magazine. And he said that image still haunts him because John Piper doesn't have a TV or anything like that. But that image still haunts him and causes him to sin. And he says he hurts and prays for people in today's time because now everything is on your phone. So that takes me to the next topic. If we want to put a stop to the hookup culture, if we want to see abstinence and chastity celebrated, then we have to do something about the pornography issue facing our country. And again, this isn't a Republican or Democrat issue. This is a conservative liberal issue for that matter. This, again, is a societal issue. Do we want our young people, teenagers, or even younger, seeing things on the internet that they don't need to see? That's going to open them up to a world of the hookup culture. I read an article the other day. I think the kid was 15 years old, and he was busted for one of the worst child pornography rings they've ever seen, where he was distributing child pornography at 15. So this isn't just a political issue. This is a gospel issue. Again, internet pornography is a real problem. And this is coming from an article in the New York Times that was posted on July 16th. Internet pornography is a real problem for the 66 million American parents with children under 18. Parents don't have to believe that such material is a direct cause of sexual violence to be driven a little crazy by it. It's bad enough that it's giving our sons and daughters some very creepy ideas about how they're supposed to look and act. So it's easy to spot parents suffering from this type of anxiety. Because we worry about, is our kid writing an essay or are they Googling things that they shouldn't Google on the computer? They experience low self-esteem because they can't figure out or even find a parental control program. This is for parents. We struggle to find parental control program that would filter out the gross stuff without restricting their children to just a few approved sites, making it essentially impossible for them to do a web search for their homework. And then this writer says, I was outraged when I asked the school my 12-year-old was attending to help me porn-proof the laptop we'd been advised to buy for him. And the school said no. As it turns out, that was more or less the only answer it could give. There just isn't a good way to keep a curious child from going after graphic imagery. Regulation hasn't worked. Two bills passed by Congress to restrict minors' access to pornography over the past two decades were struck down by the Supreme Court because they infringed on adults' First Amendment rights. In one of those decisions, Justice Anthony Kennedy suggested that available filtering software should do the trick. A third bill, the Children's Internet Protection Act, requires schools and libraries to install porn filters on their computers. The court deemed it narrow enough to pass muster. It was easier to withhold pornography from children when people had to go to a bookstore, peep show, or movie, and clerks and ticket takers could turn away children every time. On the internet, though, to paraphrase the famous cartoon, no one knows you're a kid. So that's the struggle we see in today's society. It's a very difficult problem, said Clay Shirky, an associate arts professor at the New York University's Interactive Telecommunications Program. He serves as IT support for his family, including his 12-year-old daughter and 15-year-old son, so he sees their phones and computers and is pretty sure he doesn't have anything to worry about. He says that's just lucky. And when luck is your only backup strategy, it's really troubling. Most other experts, however, say there is no solution that wouldn't backfire or flunk the free speech test. The best parents can do is teach children to put disturbing material in context. The key to parenting children around pornography is not to start an arms race with them by trying to block their access. This is what they say. It's about equipping them with the critical sensibilities to integrate the kinds of sexualized content that is presented to them on a regular basis. Now, listen to that. This again is not from a biblical perspective. This article isn't. So their answer is not to start an arms race with trying to block access to your kids' internet usage, which I would disagree with. You have the right and need to do that as the parent. And then they go further. Contextualizing is a good idea, but we have to do more because Justice Kennedy was wrong. Filtering software is not up to the job. So left-leaning, right-leaning, and middle-leaning parents shy away from a cause they identify with right-wing nuts. But we need to be challenging every parent to affirm that it's okay for her kids to become, that it's not okay to become porn consumers at 11. We should not be celebrating that. Regardless of what side of the fence you're on, if you're a parent, we don't want our kids to see that. And what does that do? That then feeds into a hookup culture. That then feeds into a rape culture. That then feeds into devaluing of women, devaluing of men, devaluing of life. That feeds into abortions. This is the starting point. So we as parents, we as Christians, we as the church must be having these conversations with our kids. And you as a parent, don't leave that up to the True Love Waits conference. Don't leave that up to your youth pastor. Don't leave that up to your senior pastor, your worship pastor, your family pastor. You have to have those conversations at home. The church is made to come alongside and equip you to be the best you can be in your family. They're not there to parent your child. So start celebrating abstinence. Talk about why you did that, or talk about why you wish you had done that. Give examples of families that you know that waited and the importance of waiting until marriage. Because if we don't get a handle on it now, and I'm telling you from experience at Hope Resource Center, We see patients of all ages. You know, some people say it's heartbroken to hear that a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old is pregnant. It is. Absolutely heartbreaking. But you know what's just as much heartbreaking for me? Is seeing that 60-plus-year-old male or female come in for an STD test. Because what that tells me is they're struggling to understand how sex was designed. They're struggling to understand the way God had it out for us, had it made out for us. And so they're going down this path of destruction. And it's ruining marriages. It's ruining relationships between parents and kids. It's ruining relationships and future marriages, because now there's all this damage and baggage that these young men and young women, or older men and older women, are taking to a possible marriage. And as that article said in the first segment that I was talking about, at some point these young people will be in our churches, we pray. They're going to be pastors' wives. They're going to be Sunday school teachers. They're going to be hosting people in their home. And they're going to feel a heavy weight on them. And so why not start now having that conversation with our kids? Why not start now having that conversation at our churches, with our families? Please don't let the awkwardness of it push you away from having it. It is a tough conversation. But it is one that if you prepare yourself to have it based on biblical reasoning. So again, you're not sitting down with your child and saying, you must do this, you must do that, you must do that. But it's sitting down and saying, let's look at Genesis and how God designed everything and why he designed it the way he did. And then tell your kid, look at mommy and daddy, and this is how we've tried to base our lives. And we've struggled and we failed at times. But that doesn't mean we don't seek the ideal. And the ideal scenario is saving yourself for marriage, for your husband, for your wife. That's the way it was designed. Prepare to have that conversation with your kids. We'll be back in a sec. Shouldn't we love you? Let's take it slow. We're back. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for listening. Today we've been talking about abstinence, chastity, and purity, and waiting till you get married, and kind of how we've, as a culture, we've moved away from true love waits, and we've kind of put that in the, along with a lot of other things from the 90s, and well, that's corny, and we shouldn't have to do that, and that's just rule following, and in reality, what that is that's gospel stuff that we need to be dealing with in our homes and in our churches. So we do need to be talking about it. If we don't want to use the term true love waits, then let's use something else. But I think that's a good term. I wore a true love waits ring up until I got married to Aaron, and people would ask me about it, and why do you wear that, and how do you know that she's the one, and all of these questions. Because I was 21 years old, and I was engaged, and we were about to get married at 22, and a lot of the people that I was around at that time, young people, were saying, how in the world do you know that is the person you want to be with the rest of your life? Why do you want to get married now? Why do you want to do these things? Well, I had answers for them. And so are we prepared now? Now that I'm a dad, I'm thinking, okay, well, at some point I'm going to have a conversation with Gavin, Summer, and Evelyn, my three kids, about what that looks like. And if we're in a hookup culture currently in 2016, what's it going to look like? My son will graduate high school in 2029. Think about that. What will society look like then? I mean, we thought we were going to have flying cars in 2000. So what will society look like in 2029? What kind of conversations do I need to have with my kids as they get older? Again, it's not just about the talk. It's about talking. And one thing that we need to realize, there may be some parents out there that are thinking, well, you know, ship has sailed, I can't do that, or it's just me, how am I supposed to have that conversation? Or there are some parents that are just neglecting it, not going to do it. So that's the church. We must be talking about these issues. Youth groups, we must be talking about purity and abstinence and the importance of waiting till you're married. Hope Resource Center, we're going to have these conversations with our patients, with our young patients, with our old patients. We're going to talk to all of them. Hey, the best step from here on out is abstinence until you get married. Because you know what? If you practice abstinence 100% of the time, unless you're Mary and God himself comes down and says you're going to carry the Savior, if you practice abstinence, you won't get pregnant. You won't get an STD. So it is 100% foolproof. Now, people are like, well, that's crazy. There's no way I can do that. Well, yes, you can. You can. You just choose not to. You choose not to. You can. So, again, that goes back to the pro-choice. You choose not to do that. So you could save yourself for your spouse. Yes, you can. Well, my past has been difficult, and I haven't done it in the past. Well, who cares about the past? I'm talking about now and from here on out. You absolutely can save yourself for your spouse. And you should try. That doesn't mean we're not going to fail. That doesn't mean we're not going to mess up. But it means, again, we're seeking out the way God designed things. That's why we do that. Why do we operate our families the way we do as believers? Because that's how God designed it. Why do we raise our kids the way we do? Because we're trying to meet the expectations and the model set out by our God. But we're sinners and we're going to fail. We're going to mess up. And as parents, we're going to fail to have certain conversations that we need to have. And our kids are going to fail and they're going to mess up. And your kid may one day come to you and she may be 17 years old and says, hey, I'm pregnant. Well, our biblical worldview should drive the way we have a response for her with love and grace and mercy. And then encourage abstinence after that. But if we're not having those conversations, then this society is going to look very different in the coming years. But if we're having these conversations, then the society can look very different in a good way, in a positive way, as we celebrate what marriage was designed to be, as we celebrate what sex was designed to be. So we have those conversations at Hope. I hope you're having those conversations at home, and I hope those conversations are happening at our churches. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Lift your head, weary sinner. The river's just there.